Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome and hello. This is Joseph G. with Rum Radio and rumradio.org, the most comprehensive 12-step sponsorship in the known and the unknown universe, which is either expanding or shrinking depending on what point of view you come to the table with. I would like to acknowledge WNAH, that's Hoyt Carter and Tony the Horse, who affords us the opportunity to broadcast live to their listening audience in Nashville, parts of Kentucky, and Alabama. As a public service presentation, we'd also like to acknowledge RecoveryToday.net magazine. It's one of the finer recovery journals, and they afford us some print space from time to time. Normally, I would introduce my co-host, Harold. Harold B. is a family intervention specialist, and he's not with us tonight because we have a special guest. It should be a lot of fun. This is Bruce Burnett from Recovery 101 Radio. Are you there, Bruce?
I certainly am. How you doing today?
I like to say the way Zig Ziglar used to say it, I'm great and getting better.
Zig Ziglar, I haven't heard that name in a long time.
I love that guy.
Great guy.
I have a little housekeeping I do, and then we're going to get right into the interview. So if you just bear with me for a few minutes. I'd like to start the show off with a third step prayer. But before I do that, a little something different. On the website tonight, a friend of mine, Oliver V, who does the Half Measures Room website, Facebook, and radio show here on Blog Talk, really nice fellow. Oliver came in to my original home group, the Hope Group in Cedar Park. And that was, I guess, Oliver's about 12 years. So we've developed a strong friendship. We just accidentally happened to meet each other in another home group here in Houston. Just happenstance and circumstance. If you've been in the program long enough, you realize there is no coincidences. All things work for good in God's world. And we exchange some of our posts. He likes the way I write, and I like some of the things he does. And I put it on his site, and he puts it on mine. And he afforded me the privilege of writing adding something to my site from his. And it was a big book prayer index. All the prayers as listed in the different steps are indexed on the site. So they're on there now. It's under the captain's table on the rumradio.org. So on that note, I think it's a good thing to see. It condenses it a lot, gives you some good ideas. But the prayers are there. It's not a lot of talking, mostly just the prayers. Bill W.'s 8-step prayer, the 8-step prayer, 7-step prayer, 3rd-step prayer, 2nd-step prayer, and the other prayers that we normally use in recovery. And that reminds me of a story. This lady was assigned to the news bureau in Jerusalem. And she's renting an apartment overlooking the Wailing Wall. And every night she would look over and every day. And she happened to notice this one same fella there, day in, day out. She'd leave for work and he was there. She'd come home and he was there. And after a few weeks of that, she got really curious to see how long this guy's been there. He always seems to be there. So she went down to the Wailing Wall and she says, "Excuse me, sir, but I can't help but notice that you seem to be here every day." He says, "Oh, yes." He says, "I've been here every day for 35 years. She goes, "Oh, that's amazing. What's your schedule like?" He says, "Well, I get up in the morning and I come and I pray for goodwill towards men and peace on earth. And then I go home, I have a cup of tea, and I come back and I pray for love and tolerance throughout the world." She says, "That's wonderful." She says, "How does it feel to pray every day for 35 years? He says, "Well, sorry to say, it's like talking to a wall."
Oh.
A little bit of a stretch. Okay, so the third step prayer, and the reason I do this, when I get a new sponsee, one of the first assignments I give them is to make sure that I get a hold of them and I ask them, "Have you had enough? Yes or no?" If he's had enough, he knows what I'm talking about, and he'll give me an affirmative. Are you willing to go to any length to achieve sobriety? That's important that the question's asked. Yes, okay. You can get well from this disease of mind, body, and spirit, but there's certain things you have to do. The first thing you need to do response is Clancy's 7 questions. I have them on the website under the How to Find the Sponsee tab. I give him the 7 questions. I said, the first thing I need you to do is answer these 7 questions, and I need them back tomorrow. If I get him back tomorrow, not the next day, the dog, either I get him back tomorrow or I never get him. It's not like they're going to come back. They're coming on a slow boat to China. The dog ate my homework. They're just not coming. They're not ready, or they're not ready for me, which is fine. So if I get him back, one of the first assignments I give to them is that to get a home group. So they connect up. This becomes your lifeline. Get a newcomers packet or a lifeline list to be passed around in one of the meetings, men with men, women for women, when possible. Give their phone numbers and their names. And then I have them call every day for the next 30 days and ask the person on the other side of the phone permission to recite the third step prayer. I call it the surrender prayer. But the reason I give them this assignment for the next 30 days, one, it encapsulates what we're going to try to accomplish by working all 12 steps. Two, it gets them used to picking up the 500-pound telephone and asking for help. Three, it connects them up with the home group, which is going to be essential, more than kin and less than kin and more than kind. These are the folks that are going to help you through. This is part of the WE program. And, of course, the person they're calling, chances are, if he was thinking about taking that first drink of alcohol, he probably won't, but there's no guarantees. So your sponsee's already into service. And this is the third step prayer. It's found on page 63, which is in our basic text, the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and do with me as thy wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Can I get an amen on that?
Amen.
Thank you, Bruce. Bruce, well, I'm so excited that you're here. Thank you so much for agreeing to the interview.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
You're welcome. It's funny sometimes in the program, and I think just in life, I've asked some people are more than gracious, and they're glad to do it, glad to help out, and glad to be known. I try to encourage them to promote their own whatever their shtick is in recovery. I don't make any judgment calls on whatever they're doing. I like to promote the other guy's deal. I think it's a spiritual concept. Because now, as long as God goes first, it's not all about me. So I want you to tell us about what you're doing, how you got started. Let's start from the beginning. When was the first time you had a drink of alcohol, and what did it do for you?
Well, the first time I had a drink of alcohol, I remember it clearly. I was on a fishing trip with my uncle. We're at some lake. I think he wanted to show me how horrible alcohol was, and he had these Schlitz malt liquor tall boys. I was 12 years old, and they were in the lake, and the lake really wasn't that cold, so the Schlitz wasn't really that cold. So you got to remember, this is like warm malt liquor, but it's a male bonding thing. You know, I'm going to drink it because he's drinking his. I open it up. I crack it open. And I start to swig it. Now, you got to remember, I'm 12. The only thing is I've ever drank before, like Pepsi and Kool-Aid, and this warm malt liquor hits my lips, and my immediate thing is, oh, my God, is that horrible. But I'm going to drink it because he's drinking his. So I chug this 16-ounce warm malt liquor down, and I'm sitting on this log with my fishing pole, and I said what I always said after that, which is, I will never do that again. And I'm sitting on the log, 15 minutes go by, and I'm sitting on the log, and I'm like, hey, I kind of like that stuff. And then I did what I always did after that, which is, can I have another one of those? And that was the start to me. That was the beginning of the end.
I remember
that's how it started for me.
Schlitz was the beer that made Milwaukee famous.
You know what? When I was a kid, it was the beer where the bull kicked the crap out of the china shop.
I never heard that.
I used to think that was the coolest commercial.
Oh, I'd never seen that. I'm from New York.
You know what? You've got to look up. You could probably look it up on YouTube. Schlitz Malt Liquor commercials with the bull. I'm sure they're on there somewhere. They're outstanding.
So now your childhood was little bouts of trying to find out where the next Schlitz Malt Liquor was. And
well, you know, I did kind of the typical kid thing. You know, I would grab vodka out of my mom's liquor cabinet, and we'd make screwdrivers and stuff with it. And, of course, we would replace the vodka with water, you know. And my mom would have these parties, and people would be drinking their drinks and looking at each other like, what's wrong with this drink? And we never really realized that we'd go back in the liquor cabinet, and we'd be getting this vodka, and every time we did it, it was weaker and weaker and weaker because we just add more water in. So it was horrifying. And then, of course, I'm a strange alcoholic, Joe. I really am. I do not like the taste of alcohol. Now, don't get me wrong. I love the effect. I'm an effects-driven person. I love the effect of alcohol. I get bigger, stronger, faster. I dance better. I sing better. I do all that. Of course, none of that's true, but I believe that it is. But I didn't really like it, and someone introduced me to weed when I was younger, and I said, you know, I like this. Doesn't have any bad aftertaste like alcohol. I did weed for a long time, and, you know, as the progression went, you know, they say that alcohol and weed are gateway drugs, and, you know, they are. And I got into a variety pack of substances as I went along. Now, I don't know. I know that we primarily talk about the basic texts of AA in this program. I don't know if about drugs in this program at all.
No. Rum Radio, although I use the basic text of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, because that is the basic text of all 12-step programs. That's where it comes up.
Yes,
it's like
it
the mother of it. I believe that anytime you take an original and you make a duplicate, it's not quite as pristine or sharp, but that's my deal.
I got to tell you, I do a lot in California. I do a lot of Cocaine Anonymous meetings. What I like about Cocaine Anonymous is they never look at changing the Alcoholics Anonymous thing in any way. They use the Big Book. They use the 12 and 12. You know, I guess flattery is a, you know, imitation is the greatest form of flattery. They don't even have their own book. I mean, they've got a storybook, but they use the Big Book. They use the 12 and 12. Of course, I do a lot of AA as well. I rode that horse until I couldn't ride the horse anymore, and there was a time where I had to put the horse out to pasture.
I understand. I have a little objection to that. It's if you look on in the traditions, on the third tradition, they covered a drug addict coming into AA about 75 years ago. And the pristine drunks were in a turmoil that this man, I believe he was black too, and someone that was a cross dresser with light hair, but I don't hold me to that. But he threw the drunks into such a turmoil. What havoc he would bring upon their pristine world, and they didn't know what to do with them. What are we going to do? And of course, the question was: some wanted to get rid of them, that it would cause too much turmoil. It had to be a pure alcoholic because we're elitist.
Do you have a desire to stop drinking?
Yeah. And somebody came up with the bright idea, the spiritual inspiration. What would the master do? Of course, the master, that alluded to Jesus Christ. What would Jesus Christ do? What would the master do? And of course, the question was obvious. We can't throw this guy out. We could be throwing him out to his death. We have to take him in. And it turned out to be a good thing for both him and for AA. Now, 75 years later, it seems nobody got the memo.
I don't think they did. And I got to tell you, now I do a lot of AA. I do a modicum of CA. I've even done some NA at different times in my life, more than others. what kills me about program in general, and this is a pet peeve of mine, I don't care what program I'm in. You know what? If I'm in AA, I say I'm an alcoholic. If I'm in NA, I say I'm an addict. But I'll tell you that nothing frosts me like if someone brings up that they're an alcoholic addict in an AA meeting and someone jumps on them. I'm like, are you kidding me? This guy's got a desire to stop drinking. If the biggest thing you have to complain about today is that he said alcoholic addict, your program needs some work. Or conversely, you go to Narcotics Anonymous and someone uses the word sober. Oh, my God, you can't use that here.
Why? I know.
I am sober. You know, I'm clean and sober. And really, is that you know, again, is that the biggest thing you have to worry about today? Because what got me into program is not nearly as important as what keeps me in program.
I can hear that. That's
the method and the drugs and the alcohols and the various types of things I did to get me there is not what's important anymore. It's what do I do to stay? Because that's all that's important to me. Now, how I got here, yeah, it's part of my story. People can relate to it. Oh, but that's not what is my past is not what keeps me in here now. It's what I do on a daily basis, what my actions are.
Thank you. I completely concur. My experience is a lot of folks, when I see old timers and they share in the meeting and they always go back to step one and they have a polished step one, it glints in the sunlight, and you're going like, well, wait a minute, Chief. Only one step mentions the problem. The other 11 steps, which is 11/12 of the program, is you talk about the solution. We live in the solution, not in the problem. So after 20 years, you're still in the problem. What's up with you?
I did a panel recently at a recovery facility, and this girl says, she comes up after the thing. She goes, oh, my God, you've got 22 years. She goes, oh, my God, I can't believe, oh, I've only got 20 days. And I looked at her and I said, what's with the only? You've got 20 days. Do you know how hard that is for an alcoholic or an addict to get 20 days?
Huge.
It's incredibly difficult. And I told her, I said, do you know what the world record for staying sober is? And she goes, I don't know what, like 50, 60 years? I said, no, it's 24 hours.
Yeah.
That's the world record. You know, that's it. If you get 24 hours, you're doing it right. If you got up earlier than me, you got more time than me today. You know, I love it when people, they're like, they get impressed by time. And I'm like, one of the best speakers I ever heard in my entire life had about 6 months. The guy was on fire. I'm listening to him. I'm like, I like to hear this guy. And I heard some guy later, he had like 42 years and he had a good pitch, but it was kind of monotone. I mean, everything was there. All the good recovery stuff was there. But the guy was kind of boring to listen to. And this guy was 6 months, was on flipping fire. And he just was so grateful to be there and just so wanted to share the message. I'm like, dude, that's what it's all about right there. Love that.
My sponsees that I really, you know, the majority of my sponsees attain and maintain long-term sobriety, not because of me, but because I work a solid program with them out of the big book and out of understandings in a timely manner. But one thing I'll tell them before I cut them loose is that the ones that really get long-term get passionate. Once you develop your passion for helping the next alcoholic, you will have the best chance of attaining and maintaining your sobriety. If you go, I call it restless laurelitis. When you start getting comfortable and getting comfy in this and just going through the motions, the clock is ticking.
Well, it's kind of like you in the show. You know, you do the show because it gives you the ability to talk to a lot of people, to share about recovery, to be passionate and be of service. It's the same reason we do our show. It's the same thing. It's like being of service, the reasonable request. We did a show the other day on reasonable requests. And I'm looking at these guys, and they're like, well, what is an unreasonable request? And you know what? In my book, boy, I couldn't come up with a lot of them. I really couldn't. I mean, there's things that would be a request that might require me to do more that normally I might want to do or be willing to do, but I have to be willing to. I had someone one time, they saw me on Facebook, and they were a fan of the show, and they said, hey, you're in Southern California, right? And I said, absolutely. And she goes, would you come and speak at my meeting? And I said, sure. I didn't even ask her where she was. I said, of course I will. Just give me a call a day or two before and remind me, and I'll be there. And she goes, that's awesome. So she calls me like a day or two before. Her meeting's an hour and 45 minutes from my house. And I'm like, oh, okay. And she goes, well, that's a long way. Are you going to come? I said, of course I'm going to come. I told you I'm going to come. I'm going to come. And, you know, that's the kind of thing. I mean, I know people that say, what? Hour and 45 minutes? I walked further than that to get drugs and alcohol before. I walked about 7 miles in the rain once to buy a quarter gram of cocaine. And I'm like, I love the people that are new in the program. They go, I can't get to a meeting. Really? Yeah, like they've got like 5 blocks to walk. I'm like, really? You can't walk that? Because you would have walked 10 times that far to get some dope.
I thought you were going to say she told you to have dinner in Alaska or something like that. Wait a minute. You're being unreasonable, lady.
Well, I've been in Los Angeles. I've gone down to San Diego to speak. I've gone out to Palm Desert to speak. I've gone up to Big Bear, which is up in the mountains, to speak. And gone to a number of different areas because, like you said, you know, it's all about having passion for the program. And you know what? I mean, the reality is I'm a run-of-the-mill, garden-variety alcoholic addict. You know, the only difference between me and a lot of people is maybe I happen to have been sober for a few more days. You know, the reality is, though, that I'm the same as everyone else. Yeah, I have some experience of working program and not getting loaded, and that gives me the ability to help other people. But at the grassroots, we're all alcoholic addicts. I mean, that's what we are. We do things the way alcoholics and addicts do it, and if we're not careful, we do things in the old way and we go out. And if we're careful and we're passionate, we take commitments and we take all the reasonable requests and we share with others and we sponsor and we go to meetings and we work steps and we work as GSRs, that's how we do it. That's how we stay here. Because it's easy to get time. You just don't drink. I tell guys that all the time. Hey, do you want to get time? Don't drink. You want your life to get better, work some steps.
And don't die. Yeah. Don't drink and don't die.
Yeah, don't drink and don't die. But if you want your life to get better, you better start working some steps.
Have you had any brushes with the law on the way up?
Back in the day?
Yeah.
Of course. numerous. Although I never had to do any serious jail time. I was always able to somehow weasel my way out of that. But, oh, sure, yeah, lots of times. I was actually outside of now this will show you how long ago this was. This was back in the 80s. I think it was an air guitar contest or something. And I am outside because I had like 11 Long Island iced teas and about 12 beers and 10 or 12 kamikazes. And I am in the passenger seat of my car throwing up down the side of the car. And a cop walks up and he goes, hey, are you okay? And I look up at this guy. I'm like, do I look okay? And he goes, you're not driving, right? I said, no, my friend's driving. Who then, of course, immediately walked out to tell the guy, oh, I'm driving. He's drunk as a skunk. Somehow the guy doesn't realize that. But, you know, I was pretty lucky in that risk. Never got a 502. Drove drunk or high every day for 20 years. Never got a 502. Don't know how that happened.
That's amazing.
It is amazing.
It's a miracle. And how about that? How many times you've been married? How many times married?
3. Twice in the program and once before.
I tell people I've been married 3.5 times, so I can relate. So you don't have a lot of money anymore.
I'm doing okay. And it's not because of the radio show, I'll tell you that. The radio show's for free and for fun.
Oh, good.
As is yours.
Yeah, it is. This is just a service that's been given to me by God to do this, the website. If you go to the website, it's got really good stuff on it, and there's no money being made whatsoever. It costs me money. But it's okay. I'm okay with that because I have a lot of fun doing it. And as long as I'm having fun and I'm getting feedback that it's helping people, I'm in the game.
Absolutely.
So how did you get started with your radio show? I mean, these are all interesting evolutions. How did that get going for you?
Well, we always do what we call the meeting after the meeting. We always go to coffee or something. And we were all sitting at the local Starbucks one day, and a guy comes up and he goes, "Oh my God, there's a recovery show on the radio." And this was on regular radio. It was a fairly large station in LA that was called KLSX, and they had a talk FM station. And it was a Sunday night. He goes, "You guys got to hear this." So we go over, and we're listening to this show because we're very interested to hear it. And I don't know what I was expecting to hear, but it sounded just like this. It's like, "Hello, we have a caller. Hi, Bob." "Hi." "Bob, have you been working the steps, Bob? Have you been going to meetings? Have you gotten a sponsor, Bob?" And I'm like, "Oh, my God, who would listen to that?" I'm like, that was like the driest delivery of anything I've ever heard. And we said, you know, if we put a microphone out on the table at Starbucks, it would be more highly entertaining than that. And we kind of took that meeting after the meeting thing in the show. Now, we started out on regular radio out in a podunk state. Well, I shouldn't say podunk. San Bernardino is a fine, fine town. But it's not a big radio town. And we were on a station that garnered, I think, a total of 5 watts. You know, significantly less than the wattage I have on the stereo in my truck. And it was one of those stations that broadcasted from a place called the Carousel Mall. An actual shopping mall is where the radio station was. And we were in a small room. And if you were in the parking lot, you could barely get this station in. And one day, the engineer says, "Wow, you guys are really blowing up." And I'm like, "How do you know? You guys don't even get rankings or ratings or anything because it's such a small station." He goes, no, on the downloads." And, you know, I had no idea what he was talking about. I'm like, "What do you mean the downloads?" He goes, "Well, we record all the radio shows and we upload them as podcasts." And I'm like, you know, this is a few years ago. I'm like, "I'll bite. What's a podcast?" And he goes, "Well, it's like a recorded radio show." And he goes, "Matter of fact," he goes, "I don't even know why you guys are on the air." He goes, "Why not on regular radio?" He goes, "Why don't you go and do a podcast?" He goes, "Your audience will be much larger than you can get from being on the regular radio." And, you know, and I'm kind of interested. I said, "Well, what do I do?" He goes, "Well, you go buy a mixing board." And I'm like, "Okay." And he goes, "You buy some microphones, and you do this, and you do that. And, you know, you get yourself a mixing program and an editing program, and you go and you do it." And I'm like, "Okay." So we did. And, you know, this last year we topped 4 million downloads in a year. And I remember when we were first on this network, the Podomatic network, there's 97,000 shows. And when we broke like the top 1,000, I was like, "Oh, yeah, we're the kings of the world. You know, we're the kings of the Internet. You know, we broke the top 1,000. And then we broke the top 500. And then we broke the top 100. And, you know, now I don't think we've been out of the top 10 but a couple times in, like, the last, you know, 6 or 7 months. And, by the way, it's a real easy website to find. It's recovery101.net. And you go there, and there's 23 pages with 20 shows on each page. And they don't have any of the shows from when we were on regular radio because that was we had a couple of different people on the show, but that all of those involved the current cast of characters. Which that's the best way I can put it.
Who is the current cast?
We have myself, and we have my wife Shelley. You know, I'm looking for my next ex-wife now, but my current wife Shelley. That's like you said, you had 3.5 wives. She's got about 6 years sober. And then we've got Mark, who is one of my friends, and he's got 27 years, I think. So, you know, we've got, you know, half a century of recovery in an hour show or a 45-minute show. And we do, you know, we've when you first tune in, we've got the jingle. You've got three different official jingles. That we actually did Recovery Idol once, and we had people send in their submissions for jingles, and we picked three of them, and we rotate through those. Then Dr. Drew comes on and says, hey, you're listening to Recovery 101. We've had him on before. Nice guy. Not so sure about the celebrity rehab show, but, you know, whatever. Then we do the boozy news and the news not fit for booze, where we find all the strange drug and alcohol news from across the country. And we go to a commercial break. We have one sponsor that helps pay with the bandwidth. That's a recovery center out in Burbank. It's been there since the 60s. And then we do the second half of the show. We do a topic. And what I like about the way that we do it is we talk about the topic not in so much as the way you'd talk about it at a step study meeting, because we're not in a meeting and we don't speak for AA, NAO, ACA, GAPA, SOA, SOAA, CR, RR, MM, DRA, HA, PA, FA. We don't speak for any of those A's, the alphabet soup of A's. But we talk about it like more the way you'd talk about it at coffee. Someone comments, someone else comments, someone else comments. So it's less getting a lecture on a topic. It's more getting kind of three people's opinions, and a lot of times they're the same, and a lot of times they're not the same. And I kind of like the shows where the topics are, or the opinions are widely distributed. I think that makes for great radio. But generally speaking, on a lot of topics, we seem to agree because we've all been able to do this recovery thing for a while.
Now, my experience with AA in particular, and something interesting has just popped up. I was wondering if you knew anything about it. On the Facebook is, you know, hot stuff right now, people jockeying for attention. Someone had put on, and I didn't know this was going on, if you dialed into the GSO on the Internet site, they have a section where they're promoting AA in press, radio, and films.
Well, if you look, when we first looked at doing a show, because we didn't even know if it was okay. You know, I mean, we didn't know. We said, well, can we do this? We contacted World Services, and they said, you know, it's completely okay for you to do a show as long as you say you're not speaking for Alcoholics Anonymous. And, of course, the guy there said you can check with other World Service organizations, but I have a feeling it's going to be similar for them as well. As long as you're not speaking for them, he said, you can speak about AA all you want. But, you know, we want you to not speak for Alcoholics Anonymous. And so we were looking around on the site because we were getting a lot of tradition questions on if this was okay. And we found what would be considered, well, I'd call them a commercial, but they're PSAs, they're public service announcements, and there's a bunch of them. Now, I can't remember exactly how I got to it, but you go in and there's like, you can go in like kind of into the inner circle of the website and you bang around on there for a while and you'll find like a link to media or something like that. And there's like 15 second public service announcements, 30 second, 45 minute, and there's a bunch of them. And it was kind of funny because I thought, God, that's sort of promoting. And, you know, the way I originally got to program in the first place, I had overdosed on cocaine once. I was in a bathroom of a motel. And when I climbed up off the floor and I went into the living room, bedroom, dining room, you know the way motels are, the room, the other room.
Right.
I turned on the TV, and the very first thing that came on, this was back in the early 80s, very first thing came on is this guy pointing off the screen, said, do you have a problem with cocaine? And I'm like,
yeah.
Yes. And it's like, call this number, 1-800-COCAINE. And when I called it, and that was definitely a promotion, but when I called it, it was the National Council on Alcoholism. And who referred me, it was a referral service, referred me to a recovery hospital. But, see, I'm kind of funky that way because, you know, I don't know if, you know, attraction rather than promotion. I'm not sure that having something in the media isn't necessarily attraction as well. You know what I mean? I mean, when AA first started, they got a big, giant boost from the Saturday Evening Post. That was certainly promotion, but attraction as well. People saw that article and they had never heard anything about how to stay sober, and they clamored onto it because it was an attraction. Now, certainly it was a promotion as well, but you know, I'm kind of iffy on that because I think any way to get somebody sober is okay.
I think
get
if you look at
the fellowship, you know, get someone into the fellowship. I don't, you know, but you know what? We've got some traditions that have been around a long time for a reason. At the same time, things change. Press, radio, and films? Really? Because there's no internet on that. There's you were mentioning Facebook earlier. There's a whole lot of that on the internet. A whole lot of it. And shameless promotion.
Yes.
I mean, I've seen convention groups where people are setting up conventions. I've always found that to be kind of an interesting thing with anonymity. Because if I go to work on a convention, say, and my name and my picture is attached on that convention page, anybody that can view that page now knows I'm in the program. Now, me personally, I could not care less. Well, I could care less, but it would be difficult. I'm the least anonymous guy you know. I really don't give a flying you know what.
Right.
You know, I'm loud and I'm proud about being in recovery. I don't care. Now, I don't break anybody else's anonymity because that's on them. But, you know, the whole thing online has been an interesting thing. They don't even mention television on the AA tradition. They do in some of the other fellowships, but they don't even mention television because there wasn't any. And now there is. And there was no internet, and now there is. So I'm kind of looking at someday when some of these traditions get a little bit updated.
You know, if you look at
for neither you nor I to do.
I like to think of myself now as more. I'm getting older as a traditionalist. If you look at the traditions when it comes to this, it was interesting because they did originally AA did have billboards. It was in magazines and radio,
yes.
And they did television when television first came out, I believe. I don't know if they got that far. Maybe not.
Tremendously.
The late 40s. And the idea was is that why they wanted to curtail it, there was two reasons. One is they were afraid that they didn't have the infrastructure to handle
correct.
The demand that they believed was going to be caused because no one had ever come up with an effective address to the disease of alcoholism. You know, this is from
right.
when man first crushed grapes. This thing has been going on for eternity. This is something that the only cure for alcoholism usually was a very few would have a psychic spiritual experience. But I believe Dr. Young said it was like in the 1 or 2% or 3% of people had that, and they were quite the unusual circumstance or phenomenon that would happen. So for the majority of people, the cure for alcoholism was death, insane asylums, or incarceration.
Right.
Which are not pleasant alternatives. So when they came up with something, they thought, you know, not only is this going to cure cure alcoholism, these principles will change the social fabric of the world. You've got to remember, you got to look at the time frame, the beginning of Nazism.
Which in a way it did.
It did, yes, it did.
I mean, in a way it did, at least for alcoholics it did. You know, brought us back from the edge of the precipice, you know, pulled us back from the edge of the cliff. And, you know, back then, I can see that. I could see when it's brand new or only a few years old, you throw it out to everybody, oh, my God, there wasn't that many meetings back then. And,
no.
You know, it's been a slow growth. And I say slow, even though in the reality, when you look at the leaps and bounds that the amount of meetings that were created took, it has been a somewhat measured growth. And I always wonder if there comes a time when they say, you know what, we've got a great infrastructure now. We've got world services. We've got general area committees everywhere. We've got hundreds of thousands of meetings. It's okay to promote. It's okay to promote. Hey, you got an alcohol problem? Call AA. We have the backbone. We have the infrastructure to handle it now. But that's neither here nor there. The thing is, it's another one of those things. Everyone's got their opinion. I've got mine. World Services has theirs. You got yours. My sponsor's got his. And, however it'll happen is the way God wants it to be.
The other point was that they were afraid with this influx of humanity, and a lot of these folks were doctors, lawyers, and Indian chiefs, pillars of the community, and anybody was going to be able to see who they were, and so their anonymity would be out the window. That was the other consideration. So this is where anonymity of press, radio, and films came in. Now, you bring up a good question, which is an interesting topic in and of itself. 1981, there was, according to the GSO, which is count and catch, 2 million in the rooms of AA. That's worldwide. But that's count and catch at best. Okay, now 2010.
I was wondering, did you ever wonder how they come up with that number? I've never once been a secretary or a treasurer at a meeting where I actually told the area how many people were in that meeting. Never once. Never once has a GSR or anything asked for a head count, at least since I've been going, the last 23 years. I've never heard it. And so I always wonder how they come up with the number of people.
Well, my understanding is they take the average attendance from the group, and they use that number for the average attendance because then they have to donate so much to World Services. Now, some groups aren't affiliated, and some groups don't pay. So some, but basically it's the average attendance of any particular group.
And I've never had anyone ask what the average attendance of any of my meetings is.
I believe it's kind of interesting. They determine that by the amount of contribution. So anyway,
I'm in Beverly Hills, my meeting seems really big because we put in more money.
We only have three
guys. And if I'm in a really poor area that's got 300 people in the meeting, but they only collect $40, they go up.
We have Donald Trump and a couple of the guys there. There's only three of them, but we look like we have a big meeting. But any event, it's counting cats, and I'm sure it's inaccurate. But the same GSO comes up with 2,100,000 29 years later.
Yeah.
So the error rate would be, you would think. So what's happened is the spinoffs, Celebrate Recovery, Rational Recovery, CANA, all this, every church, every street corner has had a diluted sense of 12 steps using Jesus and Heavenly Father, which is fine.
Celebrate Recovery and
I tell my church, I've been trying to get them. I belong to a conservative outfit. I've been trying to get AA in there. They ain't buying. I tell them if the 12 steps are not a gift from God, why have you adopted it? And if it is a gift from God, why do you feel compelled to change it? Because I don't get an answer.
Why don't you embrace it?
Yeah, they won't give me an answer, and they don't talk to me much. But that's not here. That's neither here nor there. I believe that we've lost ground, and that on the face of it, I believe we've lost ground. And I think that's why. And now that we do have an infrastructure, I think they're rethinking some of the old about, hey, it's not we have to worry about people's anonymity coming in anymore. We have the infrastructure to handle it, and we're losing ground. Let's open the little, and that's our primary purpose. I'll tell you this, and then I'll let you talk, since it's your interview and not mine.
Okay.
Our primary purpose, and all the traditions come down to our primary purpose. I believe all the traditions have to answer just one question. Does it deter us from our primary purpose, or does it enhance it? And that's the only thing you need to know.
And see, that would be the point of which I would say I'm not 100% positive that in this day and age that promotion deters from carrying the message, or if it assists in helping. You know what? I got to tell you, even 25, or well, I started going to meetings in 1980, but even then, I had never even heard it. I mean, I'd heard Alcoholics Anonymous. I would have never gone. There was nothing, you saw nothing anywhere. It wasn't until I was about ready to die, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but I was at the point where I was ready to die where I actually found AA. I mean, if someone had promoted it to me, it would have been easier to find it. Now, nowadays, it's a little different because it's kind of hip to be square. You know, there's a lot of celebrities that have gotten in recovery that they don't go around speaking for AA and stuff, but, you know, it's common knowledge. People like Drew Barrymore and Robert Downey Jr. and other people, Mackenzie Phillips, other people that are accumulating time, you know, they've been able to take that stigma, I'm the Skid Row wino, and said, hey, I'm this fabulous actor, and look, I'm doing great things. And, you know, and people look at that and they go, wow, you know what, maybe I should stop getting loaded. I'm not so sure it's bad.
No, the success stories are always making the failures are sometimes even more pronounced. Robert Downey Jr. is probably phenomenal actor, got it together. He was on the way out. If you remember a couple of years ago, he was goner. He was a goner. There was no way.
He was in sad shape too. Let me tell you. I'll tell you what though. He did recovery right. You know, last thing I remember, he got arrested for being in his neighbor's kid's bed, passed out, you know, in somebody else's house. And suddenly he disappeared. He disappeared for like 2.5 years. Nobody heard anything from him. Nothing. You know, there was none of this Lindsay Lohan kind of stuff. I mean, there was no word on Robert Downey Jr. at all. And then he comes back with like 2.5 years sober, ready to work and doing stuff. And it's like, you know, he was so, don't look at me, I'm going to do my thing. Then he comes back and he's got a couple of years under his belt and, you know, that became pseudo star in recovery in a way as well. But, you know, you get some of the other sensationalists that, oh, you get the Charlie Sheens and the Lindsay Lohans. They go in, they go out, they go in and they go out. They can't stay sober. They go on Celebrity Rehab. Even Tom Sizemore, who was on Celebrity Rehab. I mean, I'm not breaking any anonymity because I've all been very plain about this. You know, his big thing on Celebrity Rehab was smoking crack on the roof, on camera. And now he's got several years. And, you know, I'd say if you look at programs like, Intervention, number one program on A&E. If nothing else, that's not AA promoting, but that's certainly promoting AA.
Yeah, I believe
it's
that
kind of a way to promote it without AA doing it directly.
Sure. I believe there's more. You know, there's something curious. If you ever hear the statistics, I like to Google. You know, a thousand years from now, the anthropology is going to conclude that our society communed with an all-knowing God named Google.
Yes, exactly.
According to Google, there's something like 14 million alcoholics in the world. I don't know that. I didn't get the survey. I don't know if you did, but I get. However, they did come up with that. And say 2 million in the rooms. And you'll hear in the rooms that, you know, I got here because of the grace of God. And I would say, well, what happened to the other 12 million? They stepchildren? What happened? They didn't get the grace? God didn't like these folks, huh? What happened?
Right.
And the reason why I tell them that happened, and I believe this to be true, and it's in the scriptures, we turn towards God, and then he turns towards us. We took an action. Now, you were talking about your jumping off point. I wanted to hear a little bit more about that.
The jumping off point?
Yeah.
Well, you know what the reality is? I had numerous jumping off points. And this was the problem with my recovery. I started going to meetings in 1980. I wasn't even legal to drink yet. You know, I was 20 years old. And I started going to meetings, and I got to be honest, I went to meetings, and I looked around the room, and there was a bunch of old guys. And everyone was older than me, Everyone was talking about, I drank two fifths a day. And I'm thinking, dude, I never drank two fifths in a day. You know, a fifth would pretty much knock me out. You know, so these guys were like, I drank a half gallon of Kepler
yeah.
a day. I'm like,
I was a lightweight too, yeah.
And I'm, well, it's not even lightweight. I mean, it's like if you could drink a fifth, that's like 28 drinks. I mean, that's a lot of drinks. And I'm looking at these guys, and I could not, I mean, you know, I was looking through the differences instead of the similarities. You know, these guys are all old. You know, I'm doing a lot of drugs now. They never talk about drugs. I didn't drink like that. I used to look at people and go, dude, I haven't drank in like 10 years. Well, yeah, I was doing cocaine every single day, but I hadn't drank in 10 years. I'll never forget. I went to 11 recovery facilities.
Wow.
And what I was doing was I wanted somebody else to fix me. And I went to this recovery hospital, and I'm thinking hospital. You go in there, they give you a shot, they do a surgery, they do whatever they do, you come out, you're not an alcoholic anymore. And I got in there, and they said, you got to work the steps, you got to get a sponsor, you got to get a program, you got to go to these meetings. And I said, that can't be it. And I get out of that program, and I go and I get low. And then crap would hit the fan, I'd go back, I'd go to another facility, because the first facility, they didn't really know how to do it. These next guys, they'll really know how to do it. And I went to program after program after program looking for someone else to fix me. And I didn't realize it was me or us that needed to fix me. It wasn't a doctor who is going to go, here, take this prescription and boom, you're no longer an alcoholic. It's you got to do these actions to stay sober. And so what happened for a long time, and what really cemented me in the program, was actually Cocaine Anonymous. And it's because it was the first time I went in a room where everything that everyone was talking about, I explicitly identified with. Now, what I learned after being in there for a while is I can do that in any program. You know, I do more AA than I do anything. And it's not for any other reason other that I've learned to look for the similarities rather than the differences. Because if I go in and look at the differences, I'm never going to find anywhere I'm comfortable in. If I go and I look for only the similarities with people, that's what I'm going to find. And I went in and out and in and out and in and out. In 8.5 years, I never got 90 days. Now, here's the screwed up thing. I spent 8.5 years trying to get 90 days. In that 8.5 years, I can guarantee you I was sober probably 7 years of it, just not in a row. You know, AA's got this thing about in a row. Get your days in a row. Because if I didn't have to have my days in a row, I'd be coming up on a 30-year cake right now. But you know,
wow.
We got that whole, you know, we like you to have your days in a row. Because I'd get 60 days, and I'd go out for a day. And I'd get 30 days, and I'd go out for a week, and I'd get almost 3 months and go out for 2 days. And, you know, and it went back and forth. But what I was doing is I would go to meetings late. I would leave early. I would go because she was there. I would not go because he was there. And I didn't get a sponsor, and I didn't work any steps, and I did what people do, which is I went back and got loaded. And I did it over and over and over again. I didn't realize that it's like an elevator. I could have gotten off the elevator at a higher floor where I still had stuff, a house, a job, a girl, a car. And I went down a couple floors. I had the house and the car and the job because the girl left. Then I went down another couple floors, and I went the house, the car. Then I went down, I had the car. Then I went down, and I didn't have anything. I could have gotten off that elevator on any of those floors on the way down. I did not need to go to the sub-basement, but I guess in my case, I needed to go to the sub-basement. And when I got to the sub-basement is what made me teachable. I was able to go in, start related meetings, look for the similarities instead of the differences, start to regurgitate all the stupid things I heard people say. Live and let live. Easy does it. Expect a miracle. Don't get too hungry, angry, lonely, and tired. I used to think that stuff was so stupid. And then I realized the beauty of it and why it's been around so long is because most of that stuff actually works.
You know, I went to a meeting the other day, and before the meeting, I was talking to this newcomer, and he was all excited. He says, yeah, I got 90 days. And I said, oh, good. He says, I asked him, I said, you're going to get your 90-day chip. He said, well, I can't. He says, I drank yesterday. Now I only have 89 days.
Oh, my God. I was at a meeting one time, and this girl, it was a Cocaine Anonymous meeting. And Cocaine Anonymous is really specific. You know, cocaine and all other mind-altering substance. You know, and this girl, we're given cakes, and this girl says, oh, I've got 16 years. And everyone's like, oh, my God, it's like 16 candles in the cake, and we're all singing to her, and we don't have a 16-year chip. But I do on my keychain. So I take it off, you know, because I'm a giver. I take it off, and I give it over to the chip person, and this girl starts sharing. She goes, it's been 16 years since I did cocaine, and I only drink every once in a while now. Give me that chip back. Oh, my God. Yeah, give that back.
If she's really good looking, forgive a lot. You know, I said that at an Al-Anon meeting one time. I said, well, look, if the sex is really good and she turns out to be an axe murderer, it was just such a little axe. And then if you find out that she was a serial killer, you say, well, if the sex was really good, look, everybody's got things that they need to work on. We can handle that.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, it sounds, Joe, it sounds very much like you're willing to share your experience, strength, and length with others.
I do whenever
were you
I
trying, have. Were you trying to give someone a little serenity injection?
No. No, actually, it's been a while since I've partaken of the fruits of the opposite sex, actually.
You're partaking of the fruits of the 13 steps?
No. I read this just recently that men had two emotions. They were horny or hungry. If he didn't have an erection, you give him a sandwich.
Wow. That's perfect. I'm going to use that sometime.
I'm going to use, you know, when I every so often I'll go to the gay AA, Lambda, and they kind of like me there. I'm a straight guy, but I have no fear. You know, I make no judgment. I'm lucky
with
that.
They're alcoholics.
Yeah, that's all. They're just like me. Yeah. And I'll tell them I like coming to Lambda because I feel like a sharp knife in a drawer of sharp knives. And regular AA seems a little blunted after this. I gotta tell you.
Wow. I went to a meeting one time, and it was a rainbow friendly meeting. It was in Hollywood, and you know I don't care. I didn't realize that's what it was. It became pretty apparent after being in the room not that long. And at coffee break, this guy comes up to me, and he's hitting on me. And, you know, like just like any guy would go hit on a girl or whatever, you know. And he's hitting on me, and I looked at him and said, I got to let you know I'm straight. And he goes, oh, I'm sorry. You know, here you're at this gay and lesbian meeting. I thought maybe you were gay. And my friend asked me, he goes, did that bother you? I go, why should it bother me? He goes, well, he's gay, and he's hitting on you. I go, look, he likes men. If he's hitting on me, the worst thing I can do is take it as a compliment. He likes guys. He thinks I'm cute. He wants to go out with me. I go, I just have to tell him I'm exit only. But other than that, I got no problems.
Yeah, my problem is they don't bother hitting on me anymore.
Well, how old are you, Joe?
65. Joseph.
Oh, Joseph. Sorry about that. Come on. You're in the prime.
Yeah, it's funny. If you ever notice, only the aged philosophize about age. The young are much too busy living.
Well, and I got to tell you, the older that I get, the younger the people seem that are older than I. I mean, I remember when I was young, don't trust anybody over 30. Now I'm like, don't trust anybody under 30. And you know, and I'm coming up. I'm actually short timing on two birthdays right now. I've got my AA birthday, my belly button birthday are within 2 days of each other coming up here the first week of November. And, you know, I look at the age thing and I say, you know, I look at people that are 70 now and I go, you know, it's not that far away. I'm about to be 51. I'm like, hey, you know, 71, not so old.
Not so old.
I thought 28 was old. Now I'm like, if I could only go back to being 28. Actually, the horrible thing is if I went back to being 28, I wouldn't have gotten sober yet.
No.
So maybe not go back there.
Now, did you have a spiritual experience, a spiritual awakening? Now, you were beaten into a state of reasonableness, Billy would say. You became teachable. You were humiliated into humbleness. You were beaten into a state of reasonableness. You're teachable now. Now, when did you make your conscious contact, or have you? And was it an experience? Did you have a burning bush, or has this been a gradual trudge, line upon line, precept upon precept?
They talk about it in Spiritual Experience Appendix 2 in the back of the big book. I had more of the learned variety, but I'll tell you how this came about. I got sober November 6, 1989. Now, I had been in and out and in and out and in and out and in and out for years. Well, November 8th is my belly button birthday, and my mom, God bless her soul, who went to Al-Anon for years and years and years, found me at a meeting over at the local Alano Club. And she said, we'd like to take you out to dinner for your birthday. And, of course, I'm living on the street. I had nowhere to go. You know, she had gotten smart and said, you can't be here anymore. And, you know, and I was, you know, 29 years old. I shouldn't have been there anyway. But she says, we want to take you out to dinner. And I said, that would be awesome. And I'm thinking, this is great. I'm going to go out to dinner. And I got to tell you, Joseph, I had one of those alcoholic ideas. You know those ideas that sound really good when you're formulating them and they don't really work out how you think? I had
really good
those.
At the time. Yes, it sounded really good at the time.
It seemed good. And I said, when we go out to dinner, I'm going to think of every fun thing that we did when I was a kid, and I'm really going to tear at my mom's maternal heartstrings. And when I get her all softened up, I'm going to say, Mom, don't you know I've actually got 2 days sober, and this time it's different. And I'm really going to do it this time. Would you please let me stay at your house again? So we go out to dinner. The whole time up there, I'm like, hey, remember that time I hit the home run in Little League to win the game? And my mom's like, oh, yeah, I remember. She's crying. Oh, I remember. Hey, do you remember that time I won the blue ribbon at the fair? And my mom's like, oh, yeah, I remember. And all through dinner, I'm doing that. During dinner, she says, we have a present for you back at the house. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, Joseph, what could be more perfect? I'm going to be at the house when I'm seeing if I can stay at the house. And I'm like, everything is coming together beautifully. We're driving home. I'm like, remember that time we had my eighth year birthday party at Covina Park, and we hid silver dollar pancakes all over, and it was a pirate party. And my mom goes, oh, yeah, I remember. So we get back to the house. I'm sitting there, and I said, you know, I'm going to wait till she gives me the present. And I'm going to walk up to her, and I'm going to hug her. And as I'm hugging her, telling her thank you for the present, I'm going to say, I love you so much, Mom. I've got 2 days sober. This is really the time. Can I please move into your house? And I'm just ready. She brings in this package. It's gigantic. It's like 3 feet by 3 feet. I'm like, this is lovely. They're going to have to let me stay because I need a place to keep this big-ass present. And I rip open the package, and it's a sleeping bag. And my mom says, it's November, it's cold out there, and I thought you might be able to use this. And, of course, my get up and go got up and went. And I moved to the roof. I moved to the roof of the 502 Club in Covina, California, with my brand-new sleeping bag. I moved to the penthouse suite on the Alano Club.
Oh,
and
man.
I cannot get rid of the obsession, and this is where I'm getting to the spiritual experience. I could not get rid of the obsession to drink and use. Could not get rid of it. It was the thing that had plagued me my entire trial and error version of recovery, is I could not get rid of the obsession to drink and use. And I went up in the morning. I saw this guy who had been around for a long time. His name was Harvey, and he'd been around at the time like 35 years. And I went up to him, and I grabbed him by the collar. I literally grabbed him. I said, Harvey, I cannot get rid of the obsession to use. And he looked at me, and he's like, oh, hey, newcomer, you know, back off. And he goes, and he looks at me, and he goes, did you pray about it? And I'm like, that whole prayer thing. You know, I prayed for lots of stuff I didn't get. You know, I had the convenience store God. I prayed when I needed something. It's like going to 7-Eleven. No one goes to 7-Eleven unless they really need something. So it's like that's the kind of God I had. I prayed when I really needed something. And I told him, I said, I don't think that'll work. And he looked at me the way an old-timer looks at a newcomer, and he goes, did I effing ask you if you thought it would work? And I'm like, well, no. And he goes, I just told you to do it. And I walked away from this guy, and I said, you know what? It's been 35 years since he drank. He doesn't even remember what it's like, you know. And I white-knuckled it through the rest of that day. And I stayed sober that day. I get up in the morning. I'm on the roof of the 502 Club. I am dying to get loaded. I would have drank Drano if I would have thought it would have got me loaded. I mean, I was dying. And I'm up on the roof, and no one can see me. And I hit my knees. I said, oh, God, don't make me think about getting loaded today. And amen. That was my entire prayer. I look around. No one sees me because I'm up on the roof. There's a retaining wall. I'm like, cool. I go down. I walk up to this guy in the meeting. I go, Harvey, I prayed this morning. He looked at me and he goes, what, do you want a cookie? And I'm like, but I did what you told me. I prayed. He goes, great. Yeah, that's what I told you. He goes, do that every day for 30 days. And then every night for 30 nights, you thank God for keeping you sober. Now, I got to admit to you, I have always been the greatest doubting Thomas on the planet. You know, you got to prove things to me. And I have guys all the time that ask me, they say, was it God? Was it God that took away the obsession to drink and use? And you know what I say to them? I don't know. There's no way for me to prove unequivocally that God took it away. But I happened to be praying to God when the obsession left. And almost 23 years later, the obsession has never come back. So I choose to believe today. I've come to believe today through my learned spiritual experience that it's gone.
Amen.
And that was kind of the long roundabout answer to that question.
You always give it to God. I'll give you a little tip, suggestion. Always give it to God. Don't worry about the rest of it.
You know, I tell my wife all the time, it really annoys her, actually, I'm sure it does. She'll say, well, why did you do that? And I go, I don't know. I gave my will and life over to the care of God this morning when I got up and did my third step, seven-step prayer. I gave it over. It's got to be God's will. She's like, are you putting this on God? I'm like, well, I prayed for God to direct all my actions today. If he's doing it, then I guess the reason I didn't take out the trash is for some reason God didn't want me to take out the trash. She goes, oh, man, you're playing free and easy with that. And I'm like, I don't know. I forgot. I said, maybe God wanted me to do something else. I don't know. I prayed. I asked. I said, direct all my actions today, please. If I forgot the trash, hey, I don't know.
Let's have another prayer so that you can take out the garbage, if it be God's will.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
So is there anything else about the show that you wanted, any particular shows that you remember? So now you've gotten sober, and you work in a solid program, and how long before you started sponsoring people?
I took my first sponsee at about a year. And I had gone through all 12 steps. I did not think I was ready. My sponsor told me to, and he was very specific. He said, nothing helps the alcoholic like working with another alcoholic. This works when all other things fail. And he goes, so that's what I'm going to have you do. And I did. Matter of fact, interestingly enough, that guy is still sober today.
Wow.
Of all the guys I've sponsored, and it has been numerous, this one guy, I'm coming up on 23, a few months after, or about a year after that, he comes up on 22. And, you know, he's still around. He was actually, when we first started the show, Recovery 101, he was one of the original co-hosts, but he had other obligations and wasn't able to be involved as much as he wanted.
Sure.
So, he bowed out gracefully. Because, you know, it takes a little doing. We do four shows a week, so you got to have a little bit of time set aside for that.
It's a big commitment. I just do the this live, and then I do two rewinds. And it's a big commitment, that with the website.
Well, not only that, Well, my wife edits the show, but I do all of the show promotion. I promote the show on, I can't tell you how many blog sites and Facebook sites that I promote to. I do about 2 hours a night, every night. And I think that's probably one of the reasons why we've grown in popularity, because I'm just one of those guys. And you know what? Shameless promotion. You know, I'm you know, because we're not AA, and I can promote the show all I want. I do that. You know, I'll be posting recovery101.net here, recovery101.net there. I put it on this Facebook page, on that, on here, on there, and everywhere. Every recovery group I can find. And you know what? And I always do it the same way, for free and for fun. And then I talk about whatever the show is. Like, we just did a show the other day on reasonable requests. I said, for free and for fun, just what is a reasonable request? New Recovery 101 show is up. Post the link to the show and, you know, check it out. See why we've had 20 bazillion downloads. I got to tell you, I don't get it. I really don't. My wife and I and Mark, we look at each other all the time and we go, we're garden variety alcoholic addicts. What is it that makes people tune into this? And, you know, I mean, we've got, you know, it's just like you and I having this conversation. You know, we have good interaction together. I mean, it's just the thing of being comfortable talking with the people or being passionate about what you want to talk about, and people just come to hear it. And I think it sort of helps in a way that we're not 1,000% recovery every minute of the show. I mean, it's kind of, I kind of liken it to, let's say two gals that work at the local restaurant go out and have coffee together at night. Some of what they talk about for sure is going to be what happened at the restaurant. And then there's going to be some talk about some stuff that's in the news and some stuff that's this, and then some more talk about the restaurant. Some talk about the boss at the restaurant, the customers at the restaurant, a little more news, a little more what's going on around town. And we're kind of like that. That's why we call it the meeting after the meeting. You know, sometimes we like to say, you know, where two are gathered together in his name, there he'll be in the midst. So, you know, if you live in bum frick nowhere and you can't get to a meeting, I encourage people. It doesn't matter if it's recovery101.net. Go find this show. Go find the Monty Man. I can't remember. Yeah, Monty Man show. I mean, there's a bunch of shows. There's blog talk radio shows. There's a bunch of them. If you live in an area where you can't get to a bunch of meetings, see, I'm spoiled, and I think you're probably spoiled too. I live in an area where there's 25 million people. I have two Alcoholics Anonymous clubs in the city I live in. There's 80 meetings a week between those two clubs. There's a Cocaine Anonymous club. There's also an Alcoholics an Alano club in Anaheim. There's in Temple City. There's in Pasadena. There's in Glendale. These are all within easy driving distance of me. But what about the guy that's in Montana who lives out in the middle of nowhere? We went on a trip one time up Highway 49 in California, and it's where they found gold, you know, the 49ers, where they found gold, right. Highway 49. And we were up there on vacation, and I got to go to meetings when I'm on vacation. Got to do it just to see what it's like in other places. And we go into the speaker meeting, and we had to drive like 35 minutes from where we were because it was the only meeting that was 35 minutes away. So we drove to it. It was a speaker meeting. There was six people there. I'm getting a cup of coffee. I say hello to a couple people. I'm getting a cup of coffee, and I hear my wife go, "Oh, sure. Yeah, Bruce has time. He'd love to speak." And I'm like, "Yeah, you know, I'm just here to hear what it's like in another area." And she's like, "Oh, no, he'd love to speak." And I thought about it, Joseph, and I'm thinking, there's only six people at this meeting. How many times, for a speaker meeting, how many times have these guys heard each other speak?
Like, many.
Every 6 weeks. Every 6 weeks, they got to go back through all the people again. And so then I'm this guy comes up to me and he goes, "Hey, what a great pitch." He goes, "Would you come and speak at my meeting tomorrow night? It's the big meeting of the area." And I'm thinking, well, the big meeting, which would be like 15 people. And I go to this place called Angel Camp, and I go to this meeting, and it's actually a big meeting. Matter of fact, there's an NA meeting and an AA meeting going on at the same time.
Cool.
At this church. And the next thing I know, everybody from the NA meeting has come over to the AA meeting because it's someone from out of the area coming to speak. And I'm like, wow, how weird is this? So I do my pitch, and I get done, and at the end, after the meeting's all over and I got a bunch of people talking to me and everything, guys want me to sponsor them. I'm like, dude, I live 12-hour drive from here. You know, if you want, I'll talk to you on the phone a few times, but you got to get someone near here. And they're like, there's not that many sponsors around here. And I give this guy a card that's a Recovery101.net radio show card. And I go to hand it to him. He looks at it and he goes, Recovery101.net. He goes, what is it? And I go, well, it's a show. If you ever want to hear it, you know, give it a listen. If you don't like it, no harm, no foul. But if you do, you know, and you can't get to a meeting or something, check it out. And this girl goes, oh, yeah. Now, I'm in bumfrick nowhere. And this girl goes, oh, Recovery 101, yeah, I know that show. And I look at her, I'm like, do you know that show? And then she goes, oh, wait a minute. You're Bruce from the show. And, Joseph, I'm 12 hours from my house.
Right.
In a tiny town. In an area I've never been in. And there was a girl that knew me from the show. I'm like, how bizarre and great is that? I mean, it was
That's
awesome.
That's great. Yeah, I know the feeling.
It's never happened since. It's never happened since, but, you know.
My sponsor calls those God shots.
Oh, yeah. My very first God shot, I'll tell you what, I climb up off the floor in that motel bathroom, just overdosed on cocaine. I go, I turn on the TV, the very first thing on the TV, do you have a problem with cocaine? I'm like, yes. That was it. And I got to tell you, they referred me to this recovery center. And the girl goes, tell me your story. So I'm giving her the story. And she goes, oh, yeah, you're an alcoholic, all right. She goes, you're a drug addict alcoholic. She goes, I think you should come down to this program, because I was talking to a hospital called Los Encinas, which is actually the hospital Dr. Drew used to work at. And I'm like there with that. I'm like, yeah, okay. And she goes, I mean, like, right now. Now, it's been 45 minutes since I overdosed. I'm not as scared as I was 45 minutes ago. And I go, you mean now, like right now? And she goes, yeah, like right now. Come on down right now.
No, not
and I,
now.
I'm sitting there, and I'm hemming and hawing, and I go, well, you know, I really shouldn't drive because I'm loaded. And she goes, we'll send a van to pick you up.
Oh,
yeah, she pulled my covers on that.
She's kind of cutting you off at the pass.
Oh, yeah, she did, too. Yeah. The very last place I tried to get into was out in the desert, out at a place called 29 Palms. It's out there's actually a Marine Corps base out there out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
I'm talking to this woman, and because I told you, I went to 11 recovery facilities. No one wanted me to come back, you know. Look, you've already been here. You didn't do what we said, you know. So I'm looking at places out of the area, and I call this place. And this is right before my last recovery, right before the mom giving me the sleeping bag. I give her the story, and she says, oh, yeah, you sound like a drug addict alcoholic. She goes, have you ever been in recovery before? And I say, oh, yeah. Yeah, I've been to meetings and stuff. And she goes, have you ever been in a live-in recovery facility before? And I said, yeah. And she goes, how many? And I said, and I knew something was up. I said, And she goes, what did you say? She goes, did you say 11? And I said, yeah, okay, 11. Yes, I've been in 11 recovery facilities. And she goes, oh. She goes, oh, I see what the issue is. And I said, great, when can I come in? And she goes, you can't. I said, look, you don't understand. I'm a diabetic. I'm living on the streets. I don't have this. I don't have that. I need to get in a recovery facility. And she goes, oh, no, I understand perfectly. What you need to do, Bruce, is what they told you to do at the first recovery facility you went to. You don't need a facility. You need to listen up, sit down, shut up, kick the cotton out of your ears, and stick it in your mouth. Get a sponsor, work the steps. That's what you need to do. And I was like, damn, foiled again.
Yeah,
we get that way. Damn, they pulled my covers again.
I have. Was at a meeting.
Now you're in the Philadelphia area, right?
Me, no.
Houston.
Houston.
Oh, that's right. I'm only off by like what, 12 states?
Yeah, well.
So the Houston area, there's a lot of meetings there, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I always feel bad for the people that are in the areas where there's, you know, I don't know that I could have ever found it if it wasn't all over the place. Like in Southern California, I was extremely lucky to be in an area where there was just lots of programs, because I could have spent a long time looking. And if I live in a small, my aunt and uncle live in a town where they're the biggest city in the county, and they've got 4,000 people. And we had a guy that was moving up to that area, and I helped him look up meetings. There's like 7 meetings total a week. And I told him, I said, well, I hope you like those guys, because if you don't, you're going to be in a world of hurt.
You better get to like them.
Well, we did a show recently called The Same Old Song and Dance. What do you do when the meetings that you go to is the same people sharing the same way over and over? What do you do? You know, and in this area, it's easy. It's like, hey, I be the example, and I share differently, or I work on things differently, or I go to another meeting. But what if you live in one of those areas where it is the meeting, and it's the meeting that week, and it's, tomorrow is going to be the same people at a different meeting, and the same people at a different meeting the night after that, and it doesn't ever really change? You better learn how to adapt to your recovery, or you're going to be in a world of hurt.
Amen.
Absolutely.
I want to tell you a little story. I give out these Rum Radio cards to get them to the website locally, and I get into a lot of trouble for doing that. Promotion. But I do it anyway, kind of deal, because it helps. One fellow turned around to me.
Why do you get in trouble? It's a radio show.
For the website. It's not even the radio show. This is just to get them to the website. It's just rumradio.org.
So what's wrong with that? Give out cards. What's wrong with that?
It goes like this. Wrath is cruel. Anger is outrageous. But who can stand before envy?
Nice.
So I'm giving out the cards, right? And this one fella says, oh, you gave me one about 6 months ago. I says, oh, good. He said, I gave it to my sponsor in Dallas, and they love it. It's all over Dallas. I says, I'm glad to hear that. He says, you remember that part you have on there about what if my sponsee is suicidal? I says, yeah. And I spit it out. Suicide is a insincerest form of self-criticism. It's also a permanent solution to a temporary problem.
Good, temporary problem.
And it's also considered a slip. He says, when I read that it was also considered a slip, that's when I decided not to kill myself.
Right.
You could have knocked me over with a feather. So how many cards would you give out?
I'd give out as many cards as I could give out.
I do.
I print up cards and just hand them out. Actually, one of these days, we're probably going to make T-shirts. We'll probably make some T-shirts that just say recovery101.net. You know, we do it like it's going to school. We start out, we got the school bell that rings. And the bottom line is that people, if you look at it like going to school, we're the kind of guys that go to school in the short bus, the little yellow bus.
Right.
Not the regular bus. We should be wearing helmets on the way to our class, I'll tell you, because that's the way we are.
Yeah, we're challenged.
We are somewhat challenged. Yeah, but you know what? It's all about that. My thing today is, look, talks about it in the big book. If newcomers could see no joy in our existence, they wouldn't want it. You know, we've got a show that's got, you know, it's got a lot of comedy in it, and it's got a lot of recovery in it, and it's sometimes not as much recovery in it. But the thing is, we have a good time sober and clean, and that's what a lot of people that are looking for an entertainment show are looking at. Yeah, they like to hear the recovery, of course, and we've got that. But you know what? Sometimes, you know, I can only take just so much straight recovery. You know, right. If I want straight recovery, to be honest with you, I should be in a meeting. I should be in a meeting. I should be talking to my sponsor. I should be reading the book. I should be working a step. Sometimes when it comes to the radio, we've got recovery, but it's not all recovery. It's not all recovery. I mean, it's not all recovery all the time. We used to say that on the show, though. We'd say we are all recovery all the time, and we'd be like, eh, not really. We are a modicum of recovery most of the time and a little bit of recovery part of the time. But that's kind of, you know, we talked about once and one of the co-hosts, Mark, brought up, you know what, one of the things that recovery has done for me is it's allowed me to live a normal life again. And part of living the normal life is doing the normal things. And it's like we do a radio show on recovery, but we talk about other stuff in it as well, because everything in my life today is as a result of my recovery, but everything in my life isn't all recovery. I do a lot of things that aren't recovery. You know, I work, I do all kinds of things. I drive around, I go to restaurants, not all those things are in recovery. So while recovery has given me everything I have today and the ability to have all these things, what it's really done is allow me to live a normal life again. And we get people that listen to the show that aren't even in recovery. I don't get that because we spend half the show talking about a recovery topic, but I got people that I used to work with that go listen to the show, and I'll tell you something. I don't know. Do you have any grandchildren or anything?
Yeah, several.
Well, here's an interesting thing, and I brought this up the other day to my wife. We have, at the moment, probably 450 shows that are uploaded that can all be downloaded, you know, 24/7, 7 days a week from the website. My daughter, who's 18 years old, in the future, when I am long gone, if she wants to know my opinion about something, she can scroll down that list of shows until it finds the topic she wants to know about, and I'm always there to talk about it with her. Yep. It's strange because I can't think of any other profession that would allow that to happen.
That's how I got started. A buddy of mine told me, he says, you know, if putting this website together about 3 years ago, I wasn't really that interested in putting that much time and effort into it. And he said, you know, it would be a legacy. And you know why old men study the scriptures?
Yes.
They're cramming for final exams. And the word legacy all of a sudden just happened to ring that kind of bell. Something important to give back. Well, there was still time to do it, and it was given to me to do that. And I'll tell you this, and something to consider, and I believe I'm good at this, and you're probably good at what you do, because I'm one of the least things of this world, and I believe God uses the least things of this world to accomplish his ends.
Yes.
So on that note, if any other thing, we got about 2 minutes to go. Any other direction to get to 101 Recovery, Bruce?
You know what? If you just go to recovery101.net, it takes you right there. One more time, recovery101.net, recovery101.net. You know how that goes. They always say in commercials, you got to hear it like 3 or 4 times.
Right.
There you go.
Well, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. You know what? It was a reasonable request. And I very much appreciate it. I enjoyed talking to you the other day on the phone for a long time. It was very similar to that.
Yeah, thank you. I had fun too. You're very stimulating conversation. Wanted to tell you that Rum Radio's in 143 foreign countries, including Mississippi. 2,510 towns, cities, and villages, and we're approaching 170,000 hits to the website. So there's no money being made, and we're anonymous to the 11 tradition. This is a good work. If you find value, pass it on. Remember, it's 101recovery.net for some good information.
Nope.
Pardon me?
Recovery101.net.
Didn't I say that? No?
You said 101 Recovery.
Oh, okay. Excuse me.
Recovery101.net. But it's
okay.
Close enough. If you look up Recovery and 101 on Google, you'll find it for sure.
Oh, great. Okay. So, thanks again, and remember, we'll see you on the radio, rumradio.org. Good night.
Thanks.